This is a Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we are taking a cue from listeners on a few topics like, is the event movie dead? Is scripted content on TV suffering? What will the entertainment experience look like in 5 and 10 years? And a lot more. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm with the host, Troy Heinrichs.
What's up?
And John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
We're going by who was here first. And John, I got to say, he beat you.
Sometimes it happens, man. Sometimes I just get times wrong or lose track of it.
Sometimes you just lose yourself.
Yeah.
In the music, you know, the moment. But you got to own it, you know? Don't ever let it go. I'll keep going. I will keep going.
I know you will. That's why I'm leaving the floor open for you.
Have you seen the YouTube clip, by the way?
I was going to say, can we start there? Because that was freaking internet brilliance.
Dude, I'm sorry, listener, that I just called you dude. Shame on me.
But 331 different movies edited together to make that song.
If you go on, and we'll put a link in the show notes just so you can find it. But there, someone, and maybe it was AI. I don't know. I don't care. It's wonderful. It's magnificent. But someone cut Lose Yourself, Eminem's Lose Yourself. The award-winning Lose Yourself, and cut it by movie clips. So every lyric is actually from it's a movie clip that is actually transposed in certain spots, like throughout the song. It's fantastic. The whole song is done that way. And it's just something that usually most of the things on the internet, something like I just keep scrolling. I watched that probably like 3-4 times in a row. It was just amazing.
It's very crazy. Clever. Yeah. Paste, timing, enunciation. It's perfect.
I love it. And you know what else I love? Taking a kind of easy episode where we're not so focused on bam, 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 hitting the beats.
Oh, man. You know, thank God. I'm so tired of being focused.
Well, we know that, John. Well aware.
I was like, how is he tired? He doesn't focus to begin with.
You guys got any big trips planned? I'm getting ready for my annual backpacking trip where, by the way, someone just asked me, what is your backpacking trip like? And so my reply was, have you ever seen Deliverance? And they said, yeah. And I said, it's like that, but 35% less. Whee!
The fact that there's a percentage less and not like absolutely no
whee. 35%? Don't ask questions you don't want answers to. That's what I say.
I'm thinking it's a romantic time for you and a couple guys.
Hey, we like to hang out in the woods. You know what I mean? It's going to be hot, so it'll be a little buggy. Are you guys going anywhere? Doing anything fun this summer?
Summer wedding in Indianapolis in Ooh. June.
Is it yours? Because that'd be weird. You're already married.
No, it is not mine.
Okay.
I am going to, of course, ride across a state on my bicycle again.
How many miles is this? How many miles are we talking?
This one, we're doing Ragbri, the Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa.
Mm.
That's a sanctioned event, and it starts in Orange City and will go 480 some miles to the Mississippi River.
Sanctioned by who? Or whom?
The Des Moines Register newspaper.
Hmm.
They've been doing it for 52 years now.
That's cool.
So that'll be my backpacking trip because it'll literally be my bike, a backpack, and a tent. And
so you like pop up a tent every time you stop? It's like
every
that?
Every time you stop. Yep. Tent. That grab a bottle. You know, find a pool or a lake or a river and jump in and lather up because that's the only shower you're going to have.
See, now it's sounding a little bit more like Deliverance again. Do you scream that in the bike when you're pulling to a stop?
Yep, coming downhill. Whee!
If Ned Beatty can't make it down that river.
So that's July. And then August, I'm going across another state. We're going to go potentially right now. The plan is Pittsburgh across Ohio via Cleveland and Toledo back to Indiana, where we finished last year.
Holy hell. Good for you, man. That's a long trip. Yeah.
That one's about 400 miles also.
Well, that'll be fun. Question mark. John, you going anywhere? Are you keeping it home? Keeping it high and tight?
I'm keeping it high and tight. I only recently started my employment in the last 4 months at the company that I'm at right now. So I don't really, even though I get like unlimited time off.
It's a trick, isn't it? That unlimited trick is such a trick.
It sounds really nice. And like the whole company is like, yeah, if you want to take a whole month off, you can do that. And I'm like, that sounds great. But like,
then all your coworkers hate you. So enjoy that.
Yeah, there. It's very cool, but I got like a lot of stuff I got to catch up on. So I don't think of vacations in my near future. If it is, it's going to be more like a staycation. I live right by Paradise. It's literally right down the street. So if I really have to go do something, I'll go do that. But I'm not a vacation person when I'm on my own.
Fair enough. There's something to be said about staycation, though. There's something about just hanging around the house and doing nothing for a week, not spending money, just catching up on TV, going outside, going for a walk, whatever.
Yeah. And then, you know, now that I have A-List, you know, I am going to the theater a lot more often too.
So. There we go. There we go. Huh? Yeah. Well, we can tie that all together. Let's talk about some movie and TV. Remember, you can find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Find us on Facebook, X, Threads, or wherever you find your podcast. Thank you for listening. Share the show on your social media outlets. We really appreciate that. Now, what we're going to do is we put our post in our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. It's a private group. You got to look for it. It's not the page. It's the group. And just ask people, hey, if you got a interesting, really cool topic, throw it in there. Maybe we'll talk about it. So we got three or four that we're going to mention. That's basically our From the Outside In topic for the week. So now you know. Let's get into it. So Ty Nelson, longtime listener, he's got a very well thought out topic idea. You guys ready?
Hit me, Ty.
Okay. Watching Terminator 2 took me back to what an event it was. How excited we were when it was announced, the anticipation of seeing trailers, watching the Guns N' Roses video, hoping for cool clips. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Axl Rose, right?
Sweet child of mine.
Sorry. Finally, the payoff of the packed midnight movie was also a big topic of conversation all summer long. God, remember when people talked about them all summer, not just like 2 weeks? Now, stuff is hyped so much the second it's announced. We get a million trailers. Agreed. There's worries of set picks and leaks. Once the movie comes out, people see it on the Thursday night preview showings, which typically offers multiple showtimes at theaters, so fans aren't all together in one auditorium sharing the experience. Discussion carries on over the weekend, but typically ebbs on Monday as everybody gets ready for next week's release. Then the movie is somewhat forgotten. So my topic suggestion is the event movie dead? And I think everyone knows I have lots of opinions on this, but I'm going to yield the floor to either one of you two, yahoos.
Having been to a few of these, I remember waiting all day in line for Phantom Menace in the sweltering heat.
That was a good one.
And we finally bought our tickets when the theater opened at 4 o'clock for the midnight show. And then once we had our tickets in hand, we went and got into another line because there weren't assigned seating if you wanted a good seat. So literally we stood in line from 6 a.m. until midnight for The Phantom Menace. And then finally got in and then sat through 2 hours of pod racing and Jar Jar Binks. But we talked about it, right? It was fun. Like you met people in line, you had conversations all day, mm-hmm. You're playing games, you're meeting people. Like some of those people are still friends today. Not close friends, but like acquaintances. And we just, you know, we chat online when we see each other, especially when Star Wars stuff comes out. So like that's a cool experience. Like we had that with
talk about how boring Andor is?
No, we don't.
You should.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Later in the podcast. Foreshadowing. Well, we also did that for Lord of the Rings, right? All three of those. We saw the midnight shows. You know, people are dressed up, people are quoting the lore, people are singing songs before the movie. So yeah, it's a lot of fun when you can like just have one or two showings that Thursday night so that you get a packed house. And
what
feel
song
the energy
were they
of that
singing at
house.
Lord of the Rings? I'm going to call you out on that one. What songs were they singing?
They're singing the Tavern Song from the Prancing Pony. They're singing Tom
Seriously?
Bombadil.
I didn't get any of that. I got ripped off. Nobody was singing in my screenings.
Well, that's because you're in a small town and you don't have a lot of geeks in your world. So
okay, well whatever. That's nonsense. But okay, you go ahead.
But yeah, the event movie is definitely something I miss. Like we went and actually did see Thunderbolts on Thursday at 5 o'clock. And the theater was pretty packed. I would say maybe 80% capacity, but it didn't have the same vibe as if you were waiting for tickets all day. And now you're like finally there and it's finally happening. And you're, oh my gosh, this is so great. You just walked in, sat down like it was any other movie for the evening. And then talked about it a little bit over the weekend, you know, because there was some, you know, ways that they handled the mental health stuff that we talked about on here. That was kind of cool. So it did help have the conversation, which probably helped it not only drop, 55% in its second weekend and still be number one. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's not the same buzz as it was like for Phantom Menace for weeks afterwards.
So are you going to answer the question? Do you think the event movie is dead then? Or it's just like on life support?
No, no, it's dead. It's been dead for a while.
I don't agree with that, but go ahead. John, what do you think?
I'm going to go the opposite direction, not just because I feel like being combative with Troy right at the moment, but Sweet. Also because it's just, I don't think it's as dead as people think it is. I think what happened is that we sort of aged out in a way, you know? Yes. Was it a completely different thing in the 90s and early 2000s? Yes, it was a completely different thing than it is now. Is it a lot more convenient to go to the movie theaters and do a bunch of stuff and get in line and not have to wait for things? Yeah, a lot more convenient. But I don't think that it's an issue that, like, the event movie is gone. I just think that we've aged to a point where it doesn't hit us like it used to be. It's hard for it to be so exciting. It's hard for it to be so new. And on top of aging out of the excitement in a way, it's also something that it's we're so saturated with everything. It's hard to get excited or stay excited with something. So it's like, you know, we're just jumping from one event to the next event to the next event. And lately, those events haven't been hitting as hard as they used to. So I think it's more like a combination of just oversaturation, but also it's that we've aged out and gotten so used to it.
So here's my take is oversaturation is a big part of it. When you think of the big event pictures, you know, you think of your Star Wars, like you talked about. And I think if you had a Star Wars movie come out, you'd still have a big event. I think people would still get very excited. They did for all three of the episode movies. And True. They just had oversaturation, man. And there's like all these TV shows that a lot of people did not like. Too many of those. There's just too much content in general. You start to get numb. If you always have it available and you're always behind because you can't catch up, you start to just stop caring. You stop getting excited about it. It's just Marvel did the same thing. They had for a long time, people just like would be lining up for their products. And then they made so much product, people were like, God, man, I'm never going to catch up. So screw this. And they get less excited about it. It's just a factor of oversaturation. Now, the idea that the event movie is dead, I just don't agree with. It's just what kind of movies. Now, you might have, like John said, aged out of the demographic, because I do think that's a thing. Or it might not be for you. Like Minecraft movie wasn't for me, but that was a freaking event movie.
Yeah, it was.
That was a huge event movie. Sinners. It's a huge event movie.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one coming. That kind of, I mean, because really it just looks like a remake of From Dusk Till Dawn, and in many ways it is, but it also has a much deeper thematic meaning. It really spoke to an entire element of the audience that hardly ever gets talked to about their lives and, you know, their history. And I think it did it in a very entertaining way. So it made it an event movie that continues. Like it's still crushing the box office. That's an event movie. It doesn't have to be, I think we're just so used to the Star Wars and things like that and the Marvels and stuff like that. Those are, yeah, those have been historically event movies. But unfortunately, I think that oversaturation, over delivery, forgetting to parse back the content has hit them directly in the excitements. You know what I mean? Like there's just so much stuff. Who can get excited? If you give me a Snickers bar every single day, I want a break from Snickers bars. I just do. If you give me one once a month, I can't wait till I get my next Snickers bar. I'm counting the days. I don't want to be Joe Pesci. You know what I mean? So it's all of that matters. And that's why I think you're seeing people get really excited. Lilo and Stitch. I have zero interest in this, but I know so many people that are just stoked for that movie to come out. Now, you would think it would be Mission Impossible. It's the last one, da-da-da-da. I don't think that's going to be the biggest movie by a mile. I think Lilo and Stitch is going to be freaking huge. But there's other movies people are getting excited about. They're getting excited for Superman.
How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon. Well, maybe John is, but that one too. You know?
I mean, that's going to be a big hit. Shut up.
That's going to be huge.
We'll find out. I don't know. I've never seen any of them. So I hope it will for you fans.
But all of those are good movies and they will come out in droves and it will make a lot of money for the entire weekend. But I think what Taya is specifically saying is like the event movie that will get you to come to a midnight show on a Thursday night.
I'm saying
nobody's doing that for Sinners.
They were. I was literally there that night and it was freaking packed. It was an event movie. Minecraft, which I had zero interest in, was packed and people were insane and they were losing their mind. It's just they're not doing it because studios got so comfortable with churning out content. They've numbed people. So they can go home, sit on their couch and don't have to get out. It's hard to make it an event. If I can watch Star Wars, I got new Star Wars at home. I got new Marvel at home. Why would I go to the theater for it?
But also, like, I'm not going to a midnight showing. It's not going to happen.
Let's stop calling it midnight. It's not midnight anymore. It's 7 p.m. the night before.
If they had a midnight show and it's like the only show available, midnight show.
He said midnight show. And I'm just saying that you're going to have to pay me to go to a midnight show because I am not doing that. I want to be in bed at a normal time.
That's because you're old, dude.
But I still got to go to work the next day.
That was fun for a lot of people. And if it wasn't for one idiot over a Batman movie, we'd still be having midnight shows today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I just don't, you know, I'm just saying that midnight shows, you're not getting me to go to one. I do have to say that I witnessed one of the funniest things when I went to go see Thunderbolts over the weekend. And then, you know, it sort of lines up to what we're talking about here. But I was in line, not really a long line because I have A-list now. And I was in line waiting to get my popcorn.
Okay. He's just pushing grandmas over. He's like, get me. I'm on the list.
But this guy in front of me, he notices the Red Guardian limousine popcorn bucket.
Okay.
And he's like maybe 5 years older than me. And him and his wife are standing in line. And he starts losing his damn mind over this. He's like, is that the Red Guardian bucket? Is that what I get for the bucket? And he's just,
Are you kidding me?
I'm not even kidding. Okay. He is so excited. He is laughing. He is talking to the girl behind the counter. His wife is just kind of like got the smile on her face. And she just looks at me and she goes, I am so sorry he's making this big of a mess about this bucket. I'm like, no, no, no. Number one, you're a good woman. Number two, let him enjoy this. And she looks at me and I'm like, it takes a really good woman to let a man to act like that much of a joyous idiot to be able to, like, you know, have a lot of fun. So yeah,
let's just say a partner, you know, let's leave it open.
Yeah. That's okay. Well, fine. Partner.
I think those buckets are stupid at this point and your partner should smack you in the face before you spend $45 for one. Nobody wants an Airstream Accountant 2 popcorn bucket. No one. And if they do, their name is Ben Affleck.
Was that an option?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
What? And I missed it?
Yeah, they had an absolute Airstream popcorn bucket. It's ridiculous. Although maybe it's like the Doom bucket. I guess you could hump it if you wanted to.
Okay.
But Ty's other point is just the amount of like hype coming into the weekend. There's just so many trailers and so many conversations, so much internet.
I agree with that. Oversaturation.
Yeah, it's oversaturation, but there's also the other side effect of oversaturation is that there's a lot of people who are just tuning out. And to some degree, I'm one of these people who are just tuning out and I'm not really paying attention to the trailers as much as I used to. I'm not sitting there like going nuts over what's coming out next because I know that they're just going to write some trailer that's going to spoil the movie for me or something to that degree. And I know that there's a lot of people out there who are in that same boat of like, I'm not going to pay attention to commercials like I used to.
Well, I gotta say, I mean, if you're, you know, the demographic that they're always trying to capture is 18 to 34, right? They're not watching TV. They're not seeing commercials. So I don't even know why they invest. That's why they're doing so many influencer ads now. You know, they're paying influencers to kind of talk about their different movies and TV shows and products and whatnot. So I think you're going to start seeing a lot less commercials going forward because they just don't work anymore. You know, it's more about digital marketing and trying to get people excited and doing something wild on the internet. That's how you rile people up. And also bringing the content back, dialing it back. I mean, Bob Iger just talked about this. That's why it's very important to make sure that the movies are good and that there's less of them because they were doing it. They were churning out too much content.
There's a reason why the Disney Vault was invented.
Oh God. Remember those days where you got like 7 years to buy something you were screwed or whatever it was.
Never get access to it again.
That's what they used to do. They would come out with their VHS tapes and you had 7 years to buy Cinderella or whatever, and then it was gone. And that's why those things were valuable for a long period of time because, you know,
scarcity.
Couldn't find them. And they took it seriously. They were gone.
Look, I'm telling you, Instagram, TikTok, that's where the reels, people spend so much time scrolling through reels and talks and all that stuff. Like, that's where the advertising is today. Mm-hmm. It's not in front of your network fall schedule as we're during upfronts or the end of the upfronts this week as this podcast drops.
All right, Segway boy, you got it. Let's move on to TV. Chris Frid, the purge of network TV has happened these last few weeks. Is scripted content done at the networks is what he wants to know. CBS seems the only network that has success with dramas. Are we looking at a future of reality TV full time? I think that's been a concern for a while, but Troy, you're the TV maverick.
I was the TV maverick, and I have navigated away from pretty much every network drama save two, I think I'm still watching, just because they're cookie cutter formula script TV stuff, and it's not good stuff.
Networks are really for the older audience most of the time now, right? Even the people that do watch shows that are on network TV, like I watch Tracker. John, I think you watch Tracker too, right?
Yep.
But I watch it on Paramount. I don't watch it on TV. I don't even have access to network television anymore. It's all through streaming. It's either Peacock or Paramount or Hulu.
Yeah, if you told me today, you know, I'm watching Tracker, and I'm like, oh, that show on Paramount. I'm not saying, exactly. Oh, Tracker, that show on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already had the discussion about CBS is on Channel 2 and 3 of the major markets, and so that's why CBS gets the most viewers. But
I don't think that's why, man. I think they have their audience. I think network TV audiences are older. They skew older. So they have more older programming, and therefore it's tailored for them, tailor-made for them. And it's more episodic. And I think most people that are sitting on their couch that are 55, 65 years old or whatever, they don't want to keep up with a serialized drama. The majority. They just want to tune in, watch an episode, and move on.
And they're really not watching it either. I mean, you look at my parents. My parents have it on, and they're just scrolling on their phones while the TV's on in the background.
So do you think it's just going to all be reality at this point? I mean, Fear Factor's coming back. I know NBC talked about that. And
it's cheaper.
And they're going to like make them all live in a house for this new version of Fear Factor, I guess. So it's going to like merge with Big Brother in some way, I guess. You got Amazing Race. Is that still on the air? You've got all these different game shows. I mean, there's a ton of reality TV. So I do think scripted TV is suffering.
I mean, Race and Survivor have been there for, gosh, 20 years now.
Mm-hmm. Still bring them in.
Still do. We're approaching their 50th cycle on Survivor.
That's nuts to me. That's nuts. I've only seen the first year.
That's 25 years.
Still only watched the first year.
I'm still gold star, haven't watched it.
You don't get, there's no star that gets handed out for that.
Yeah, it is. If you've never watched Survivor, you get a gold star.
No, that's only if you didn't watch Grey's Anatomy at all.
Right. I didn't watch that either. I got two gold stars.
I swear to God, if I could slap you through the internet, I
you
would.
You can't reach me. Can't reach me.
Between that and, well, you didn't play Last of Us. Those are the two things I'm going to smack you with. This year. If you would have finished the game, you would have known.
It really does seem like a streaming is going to be the new home for scripted television.
It's cable now.
Yeah,
it's officially the thing that we said we were going to avoid.
Yeah, it's become the thing. Yeah, it's become the nightmare we all hated. Didn't want it to become. So yeah, it really is, and that's why so many of these channels do have their own streaming service. You said Peacock. Well, that's NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, you said Paramount. That's
Hulu is ABC and Fox.
Right. Mm-hmm. So all of them have their own streaming centers, and that's where they're going to put all their scripted shows. And then for those people who don't know how to plug like the internet in, then they have their reality shows.
That don't know how to plug the internet in. God.
Which just goes to show like that, like some of the networks still are like completely outdated in this concept, right? Because like ABC, it airs, you know, Tuesday night, and then you don't get to see it on Hulu till Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Where HBO is dropping it at 8 o'clock on Sunday night at the same time, both on cable and on streaming.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It's like, why do we have to wait the 24 hours?
It's like, what are you trying to encourage people to watch the network TV? Because if they're not going to watch it when it airs, they're not going to watch it. So just put it on your streaming service right then. I don't know if it has to do with how contracts are built. I honestly don't know, but it really is a weird
they're trying to drive viewership for these advertisers that are stupidly buying this week, right, billions of dollars in advertising revenue for these shows. It's like, I'm purposely not watching it on network TV to avoid your ads.
Well, that's the you know, going back to, this is part of like that movie discussion we were having with oversaturation being a problem. So yeah, we have an oversaturation problem also on television, and in that matter. So same thing with streaming. But I think what happened is that we broke that that dependency on TV that we used to have, because it used to be like if we walked away from our television or we walked away from something, we would miss something. But now when we are able to walk away, we're able to tune in when we want to tune in, we are able to go live lives that don't require us to stay stapled to our television anymore. And it's changed our entire habits. It's changed who we are as people, because we're not stuck to the boob tube.
That's happened since VCR was invented, though.
No, it's not to that. Not to this extent.
Maybe it's for you. That's how I used to watch. I would record it and then watch it on a VCR. I just don't like commercials. Anything to fast forward through commercials. But I get what you're saying. You. Yeah.
And they're loud. And they're louder than the regular TV program for a reason.
I know.
That's annoying. Loud noises.
Make you buy things. That's what it is. They want you to buy things. Did you buy things? You got a bunch of stuff in the room you're in. I bet you they worked at one point.
Actually, no. There's two reasons why they do it. Number one, it's in case you fall asleep during the show, you wake up for the commercial. Or two, that's when people get up and go to the bathroom and get snacks, so you can still hear the advertisement in the other room.
Do they not shut the door when they pee? Because that's gross.
If I'm home alone, why do I need to?
I still say close the door. Have some respect for yourself. All right. Moving on. Stuart Bannerman. What will the film viewing experience be like in 5 or 10 years? It'll all be on your phone, and it'll be a sad, sad world, and the robots will have won.
See, no, 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 no. People want these big screens and all this other stuff. It doesn't matter. The screen size is proportionally relational to the distance between your eyes and the viewing medium.
So you and I will disagree on this for the rest of our lives, because nonsense.
If I have a 7-speaker surround sound headphone set with a VR goggle and I can sit in my comfy chair and not be bothered, that experience is just as good as going to the theater.
That's nonsense. Maybe to you.
It's the same.
It's not the same for me and millions of other people. It's not the same. Not even close.
And then I have like a secondary screen where I can have my chat open with everybody else that's watching it. And then I can still chat with my friends. Like I'm whispering to them when they're sitting next to me. That somebody yelling at me 2 rows behind to shut the fuck up.
Well, number one, you should just shut the fuck up to begin with. Number two, then you're not paying attention. That's the thing that drives me nuts. Like, that's why I love a movie theater, because then people pay attention. They're forced to, at least in my theater and a lot of the theaters I go to. Like, they have good theater etiquette, and they're paying attention to the movie, and they're not on their phone, you know, like you are right now, not paying attention to this conversation, just like 60% in, 40% out.
I tuned you out 10 years ago.
That's fair. But when you're in a movie theater, you're captivated. And there's no way, I don't care where the fucking screen is, that your phone is just as equal to going to a movie theater when it's 1,000 feet big. Like, that's just nonsensical. I understand what you're saying. Well, it's right in front of your eyes. Yeah, that's in front of my eyes. Plus, it's beyond my eyes. It's over. It's way past what I can see all of. It's just, no, it's not close. Nonsense.
For you.
For eyes. For everyone's eyes. what I will say is, like, you say, what is it going to be in 5 or 10 years? I think you're probably going to get many of the same debates. I think we've had this movie theaters are dead debates for the last 5 years. They're still cranking out hits here and there. It's just about making movies that people want to see, finding the right properties that people want to invest in, etc. I do think you're going to, there's no way they can keep up with the amount of content they're churning out right now, because at some point, like, the check comes due, and studios have been just throwing money left and right. And at some point it is going to hit them, except for Netflix. Netflix is the only one that has figured out this master program to make streaming profitable for them. Everybody else is cutting back on really expensive projects because they overspent. Netflix, they're just throwing money left. They just spent $300 million on The Electric State, which was terrible, and nobody even, you know, watched it.
Oh, I totally forgot that came out.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, I think you're going to see I think it will evolve in some form. I don't know what form it evolves to, but I do think it'll be more on your phone. I think there'll be a bigger focus on short form programming, like shorts, or shorter episodes, kind of like Cobra Kai, where they're like a half hour. than these long, drawn-out dramas. That's my thought.
I would say Cobra Kai, though, was a dramedy, so a half hour fits that show.
Sure. Well, but like, I can see that because people's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter and shorter, especially with the younger generation. I can see them kind of going to content that is in shorter form and more streaming. Because YouTube, I think, is actually the only thing that is bigger streaming-wise than Netflix. Maybe
I would say maybe that's
TikTok.
True.
Hmm?
I would say YouTube's still probably there. TikTok right behind it.
Okay.
I think augmented reality is going to become a bigger thing than anyone expects it to be.
Man, everybody keeps wanting that, but I just don't. How?
How?
Google Lens and PlayStation had goggles. Like, nothing seems to catch. People don't want that on their head.
VR. That's not AR. AR is different than VR.
HoloLens was AR. HoloLens was AR before Apple came out with their augmented reality.
How will this be huge?
No, it's just right now. I mean, right now it's to a point where it's not really cost effective. It's like $3,000 or $3,000+ for a HoloLens or the Apple unit. So it's not really cost effective. But when it starts becoming cost effective, it's going to change to that degree. When people aren't spending the price of an amazing TV that is 80+ inches for something that fits over their head to do the same thing, then that's when it's going to become something that'll become a big deal.
Well, but, explain what it is so I understand.
So
what you're saying.
Augmented reality essentially is a helmet unit or a glasses unit that goes over your eyes, and it puts a screen into your field of view, and you can actually pin that screen onto certain walls, and it'll remember where that screen is. So like, if you want to set up several different little screens that have several different televisions on it, so to speak, you can do that, and you won't actually have the televisions there, but whenever you look at that wall, it's going to have all those little televisions on it. Or if you go so far as, and forgive me for bringing this up, but if you want to play Minecraft but you want to be playing Minecraft on a table in front of you, then you can definitely do that, where you're building and doing Minecraft as a person in this tiny little Minecraft world on the table. Or you can do the same thing with Dungeons and Dragons also. So it's a very interesting, very cool setup that you can do that is very interactive with, your hands and gestures and with controllers and whatnot. So it has a lot of great applications. I've seen a lot of artists recently use it as a way to start doing murals with it. So they'll actually get to do the drawing on a regular size, but they'll have it imported into their HoloLens or their glass, whatever glass unit they're using, and they'll put it up on a wall, and because they can see their hands still and see and change the gradation on the image that they're putting up on the wall, they can actually still see their hands and start drawing directly on that wall. And wherever they turn their head or wherever they move, it doesn't matter, because it keeps the same orientation the entire time.
Now you can still see in front of you and everything around you, right? In like a real world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I can see that.
You can mess with the opacity. You can mess with the opacity to make it very opaque, so you can't see through whatever it is that you're seeing through, or you can make it very, very opaque or very translucent.
Well, I could see that becoming more popular. I mean, I don't think that's going to be everybody is doing that thing, do you?
It may not be an everybody thing. I think, as I become an old man, I'm like, you won't catch me out in the world with that. But
yeah,
you're
going to be watching Matlock on CBS or Paramount Plus.
Yeah, I mean, Maddie Matlock is so awesome, though.
Or you could have Kathy Bates right in front of you as you're going for a run. It's like,
hey, that's exactly true too. You can sit there and be watching it, and then you've got it going, and yeah, that's exactly true. You can definitely have it playing right there in front of you.
I mean, it's currently 2025, so we're only 20 years away from the Oasis in Ready Player One. So maybe not in 10 years, but in 20 years, we could definitely see virtual reality and living in a virtual world very much a potential.
I mean, I just feel like it's been talked about for many, many years, and it just has never taken off. And every time, I mean, they tried virtual reality, nobody cared about that. There's like, it's such a small percentage. Google Lens has been talked about for many, many years, and it hasn't taken off. That would be cool, I suppose, if you want to live in the high-tech world. But I just feel like some people just want to lounge on the couch and have their hand in a bucket of popcorn or a bag of chips and not have to think too hard.
I think my problem is that I would have to buy a larger unit because my head is so freaking big.
Which is part of the problem. It's a matter of like right sizing the glasses to eye ratio to head size to nose shape. And I mean, that's been the challenge. It's like trying to find glasses or a headset that fit the majority of people.
I don't think that's a challenge. I think it's making it affordable and making it to where most people would find it interesting. Because I just don't
have... Exactly. I think that's more the point. Make it affordable and make it so that most people find it interesting. I agree with that because of my...
Very easy to use.
I agree with that because of my exposure to FPV drones, where you have a headset on, and sometimes those heads, you have to find the right headset for your head, and that's always been a challenge for me because of the way my face is shaped on top of the sheer size of my head. So, like, I get it. Like, it's got to be affordable, and it has to fit your face and be very comfortable, and that's part of it too. Right, right now, it's still such a weight to put on your face for a long period of time that it can literally be a headache.
All right. We got one more on this bad boy. Okay. And then we're going to move on to other stuff. But Jeff Carter, who loves to talk about the Zack Snyder of the world, is why did he say that name? Now, if you're struggling to figure out what he's talking about, Batman versus Superman and the whole Martha complex. So why? John, Troy, why did he say that name?
I mean, it is his mom's name.
I can't remember the last time I called my mom's name out.
I mean, it was dying.
I would say mom. I know he said, please save Martha, but I'd be like, please save my mom. That wasn't that just as humanizing? We can agree that is one of the dumbest solutions to a struggle in a film of all time, right?
Well, I didn't like the film at all.
Just get the hell out of it. John, this is just you and I talking.
Yeah, we don't need him. You know, it is a very problematic and very lazy writing to do that. You know, it's ultimately he's in the moment. He's like, hey, my mom is a human being, right? Mm-hmm. That's what he's trying to say in the moment.
Save my mom. And Batman's like, oh man, he's just like me. He's got a mom named Martha.
Yeah.
Couldn't she be an alien super villain named Martha too?
It could have been.
He's got a mom too. We've all got moms.
Yeah, I think that's what they were going for is like, you know, is what he was going for is like, let's try to make this connection between these two people to be like,
show
you know,
humanity.
Show this humanity. Show that they both can be mama's boys, you know? And that's what the moment is all about, but it gets ruined because it's just so ham-fisted.
Here's what I hope, because I'm not spending a lot of time on this because we've talked about it ad nauseum. But I hope in the new Superman movie, the same thing happens. Just to piss everybody off. I hope James
Gunn goes. Only it's Jonathan this time. Save Jonathan.
Nope, I still want it to be Martha. I want James Gunn to throw it in there somewhere, but make it funny. But make it work. You know what I mean? Just really workshop it. Make it work.
Speaking of which, did anyone see the trailer for Peacekeeper or Peacemaker?
Yes, I have seen it. Yeah. It looks funny.
I'm so excited.
It looks funny.
I'm so excited.
I mean, the Martha comments, if I'm remembering right from the film, right? Martha Kent gets kidnapped by Lex Luthor in the movie, right? Yep. So if we're thinking about dialect and the fact that I just had this like punch out scene. I'm about to get my ass handed to me by the Batman. Right. And he's like, and Superman would be kill me, but save humans, right. Mm-hmm. Save the other people. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to shortcut it. I think in this moment, because instead of saying save my mom, Batman's going to be like, well, who's your mom? Right.
And I get that.
So he just says, save Martha. And he's like, why'd you say that name? Cause that's my mom's name. Go get her.
Yeah. Like the whole scene is a problem because like that fight scene should never have happened the way it did. It should have been Superman shows up. Batman is throwing everything but the kitchen sink at Superman, and it's not doing a single thing. And the whole time he's like, Bruce,
smacks him with a glove.
Hey, are you done? Can we talk now? Fuck. All right. How about now? Look, my mom's in danger. Okay, fine. That's how that scene should have gone.
Well, they should have followed I've said this before, but they should follow the comic book, because in the comic book, the whole point was that he was beating him using kryptonite and everything else and all his intellect to show you're not a god. You're not infallible. You can be beaten. The whole thing was to teach him humility, even though he didn't really need to be taught humility. Superman is very humble as it is.
Yeah.
But Batman was angry because he thought this is an uncontrollable being that needs to be told you can be controlled.
Well, because of what happened in Man of Steel.
Yeah. I mean,
it not worked. His
just
fault.
Martha just didn't work. But my God, we don't want to spend too much time on this. Let's move on. And what you should move on to is Landman, because this is a great show. I'm glad that it's finally coming out on Blu-ray, but the Paramount Plus hit series Landman Season 1, starring Billy Bob Thornton, Demi Moore, Oscar nominee Demi Moore, and John Hamm, is now available on DVD and Blu-ray with over 85 minutes of special features. And I should mention Ellie Larder. Yeah, the great Ellie Larder is on this too. Landman Season 1, you can own it now on DVD and Blu-ray. I highly recommend this one. This was a real huge surprise for me. I do not love Taylor Sheridan shows in terms of, like, they just don't usually speak to me. I'm usually watching a lot of genre stuff, but this really kind of hooked me into his world and made me check out a lot of his other stuff. Really, really pleasant surprise, and man, what a great show.
Which you wouldn't have known about if you had not been watching Tracker on CBS.
That's true.
On Paramount Plus.
That is true. I didn't know you were going to drop a Paramount Plus ad here randomly, but thank you for that.
You bet.
All right. Now let's go on to our whole game, which is Troy, and we're going to play Let's See Where This Goes. And that just means you pick any topic and film or TV, and we'll see where it goes.
Okay. Since we're getting, you know, typical axing of shows currently, you're in charge of writing the upcoming hit series for the fall. And I want to know the premise that you're getting, the log line you're getting, is dealing with trying to find a person by the name of Monroe in a city, say the size of Seattle. So John, you're familiar with the Tampa area. Tampa's about the size of Seattle. So you can take Tampa, and then Aaron, to get the same city size, like, you're going to do it for the Minneapolis, St. Paul metropolitan statistical area.
Okay.
So yeah, that's it. Log line. You know, person from out of town gets dropped in major metropolitan area to find Monroe. Go.
Like how to solve this problem?
Yeah, write the pilot. Sell me on the pilot and why I should put it on my fall schedule.
All right, well, here's the only way this works in a town that size, okay? You walk up and down the streets screaming at the top of your lungs, "Where the fuck is Monroe?" Until you find him. It's going to be a very short series. It might be a limited. Bam.
Thanks for the thought.
You're welcome.
Put into this. Appreciate it. All right, John, how do you find Monroe in Tampa?
Well, it's Tampa. First thing I'm doing is I'm going to Columbia Restaurant, right? I'm going to have a nice meal because it's Columbia Restaurant. It's amazing food. It's been there forever. Going to have a 1905 salad. I'm going to have a good time. Then it becomes a show about going to every straight strip club in Tampa.
Say that again. I apologize. I cut you off because the oddly specific explanation.
No, he's doing a good job. He's right in the pilot.
Yeah.
Show opens.
I'm finding Monroe faster, but go ahead. It's more interesting.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Because it's Tampa and because I know what Tampa's like, and that's the reason why I don't go there. After I have this 1905 salad, I then go from every single strip club looking for the man named Monroe.
Oh, okay. Don't know if we can put that on network TV. You know, maybe at 9 o'clock.
You can. You can only show legs.
On a Friday night?
Knees down.
Yeah.
Knees
down. Stalking style.
That's how you find Monroe, is going to all the strip clubs?
Yeah.
Maybe your experiences are limited, because I don't think everybody in the world would go to a strip club in Tampa.
A guy named Monroe who I have to find and happens to be in Tampa, that's where he's going to be.
It sounds like that's where you want to look.
It doesn't really sound
like that's where he's going to be.
I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't have a stack of ones rolled up in my pocket over here.
My way is much better. What do you got, Troy? How do you find Monroe? You know how you don't do it? However Last of Us is doing it. That's how.
You mean with nothing but plot armor?
Oh my God.
I need a city that's about that same size, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at my list. Okay, Detroit. Detroit, Warren, Dearborn, Michigan, right? So it's a gritty. It's dark. You know,
it's empty. Just go up and down the street yelling Monroe.
Not empty.
It's Detroit. He's already dead.
It's Detroit. it's a gritty. It's a former cop. Monroe's a former cop, right? and he knows and worked with all the people in the underground and the chop shops, right? All the good parts that the corporate people are now turning to because of the trade wars that are currently happening in political society today. So the chop shops have to actually work with the police department to get the parts in order to make their money. So they're actually turning it over to the cops because the cops are corrupted. And so as he's working the circuit, going to all the chop shops, he then tries to find Monroe, the one cop who's still good in the city of crime.
Is that Monroe?
Monroe's the one good cop.
Okay.
They got to find him and bring him back to the force.
In Detroit.
In Detroit. Okay. Detroit City.
I mean, that is a good place to never stop because you only get one shot. You don't want to miss a chance to blow. Opportunity comes once in a lifetime, yo. So go find Monroe.
That's exactly how we're going to do the trailer.
And then have Eminem do some random theme song.
Instagram reel.
God, this is a weird topic. All right, let's go to some spoiler-free reviews, upcoming attractions, and what you've been watching. So first, theatrical coming out on May 23rd. What's coming out, Troy?
That's right. Memorial Day weekend is here, and it'll be your mission, should you choose to accept it or not, to see the final, potentially, Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise, maybe, because it is the final reckoning.
It needs to be.
It'll be the 8th installment of the Mission Impossible franchise, so go check that out. You can hear us talk about it on our summer movie preview a few weeks ago. For the family, though, if you want to go check out a really great Ohana movie, you can do that with Lilo and Stitch, the live-action remake. Does hit theaters Memorial Day weekend, where we see a young girl's close encounter with the galaxy's most wanted extraterrestrial create havoc in real life. It's going to be amazing. You can also check out Friendship if neither one of those... like tame movies are good for you. Rated R, when an errant delivery pulls suburban dad Craig Waterman into the orbit of his mysterious and charismatic new neighbor, Austin Carmichael, a sweet bromance seems to blossom. But then things get really, really weird.
Yeah, weird. That stars Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd. I saw it at South By. It is well worth the investment of time. If you like weird, very uncomfortable comedies, you will love it.
And is this better? Weird. Better than Death of a Unicorn with Paul Rudd?
Yes, okay. It is. Yep.
That was funny. I like that one.
This is I'm telling you, it is so weird. Like Tim Robinson, if you've ever seen his show, I think you should leave or whatever it is on Netflix. He is very well tuned at uncomfortable comedy. And that's exactly what the whole movie is. Like there is some weird shit where I'm like, where is this going? And I still don't know where it was going, but it got there. And it was funny.
And if none of those are worth your while, if you're lucky enough to get one of these in limited release, The Last Rodeo shares the story of Joe Wainwright, played by Neil McDonough, an aging retired champion bull rider, and his daughter Sally, played by Sarah Jones, who face a crisis that can only be solved by Joe entering and winning a bull riding competition.
Yeehaw.
Also, The New Boy in limited release, set in 1940s Australia, a 9-year-old Aboriginal boy arrives in the dead of night at a remote monastery run by a renegade nun played by Kate Blanchett. The boy's presence disturbs the delicately balanced world in this story of spiritual struggle and the cost of survival.
Sounds a little bit like a horror movie.
A little bit.
Also on streaming, which should be in the theater, Fountain of Youth for Apple TV Plus. That revolves around the mythical Fountain of Youth, where if you drink from it, you live forever. And it stars Natalie Portman, John Krasinski. It's very National Treasure meets Indiana Jones kind of vibe, directed by Guy Ritchie. Man, I am stoked. I really do wish this was in a theater. I would absolutely watch this in a theater.
I think it would actually crush.
I think it would. I think it would do great, man. People miss having those kinds of like fun family adventures, right? Those kinds of movies? Sure. I think it would be great. And also Fear Street Prom Queen on Netflix as a shady side high school. I can't stop doing it.
He's a Slim Shady now. That's what he
prom
is.
Prom Queen candidates are brutally murdered one by one, leaving only one. Everyone speculates as to whether she will be the killer's next target. Unlike the last Fear Street, this is not three movies. It's just the one. So looks like fun. And, I want to review this week Wick is Pain. Okay, so this is a documentary available on digital. You can rent it on digital. I can't recommend it enough. If you're a fan of the John Wick movies or you just love action filmmaking, it is fabulous. One of the best documentaries I've seen on something like this. And what it is, it's you have in-depth interviews with Chad Stahelski, who's the director, David Leitch, who was one of the directors in the first movie, and Keanu Reeves, obviously. But they go through all four of the existing movies and kind of how John Wick came to be, how they almost lost the movie, how Eva Longoria saved the movie and saved the franchise, and particularly how they kept upping the ante on action. And I think it's something that always fascinates me. I love anything that really shows the nuts and bolts of filmmaking and makes it interesting and compelling as a movie. And it does. I mean, it's very narratively driven. It's told in sequence. So you're starting with John Wick 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 and kind of showcasing exactly how these things came to be. But specifically the first hours, like John Wick 1, because that was such a labor of love and kind of rose from the ashes and was supposed to be the first movie where David Leitch and Chad Stahelski kind of worked together as co-directors to bring this to life. It was their dream as stuntmen to create the one of the most exciting action movies of all time. And they kept making this movie, even though all the odds were stacked against them. They were losing money left and right. Keanu worked his ass off. It really goes into his work ethic, how punishing it is for someone his age to try to do some of this stuff, but he keeps going. It really shows his reverence for filmmaking, and everyone knows he's a wonderful guy, but you really get a lot of insight into him as a person, I think, and as a professional, which I found fascinating. It's one of those documentaries I can't recommend enough. If you really care about filmmaking, Wickest Pain is one of the best I've seen. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I give Wickest Pain $9. I absolutely loved it.
Checking it out now.
While we're recording the podcast?
You know it.
God, am I that boring? All right, so what you been watching? I guess just me this week. Is that about right?
I caught up on all of Andor over the weekend, so I can talk about Andor.
I finally got caught up on The Accountant too, which is amazing.
Okay. Well, I will tell you, I saw Shadow Force. I'll tell you that one first. And that's Kerry Washington and Omar Sy. It's basically a Mr. and Mrs. Smith type plot, where these two are a couple of assassins who fall in love, have a kid, leave the life, and kind of go into hiding. And there's a bank robbery that goes awry and kind of gives away the fact that they are out in the wind. So then Mark Strong stars as the former head of what was known as Shadow Force, the assassination team that they left, and he tasks all the other assassins with going after him. And I will say, I mean, it's directed by Joe Carnahan. It's a director I like a lot from the A-Team and whatnot. This is a terrible movie. I do not recommend anyone sees it. I really like the actors. Omar Sy, you know, he's Lupin and whatnot. And Kerry Washington has been in a million things. And Joe Carnahan and Mark Strong. I like everybody involved. Divine Joy Randolph's in here. She's fantastic. Method Man's in here. He tries his best, but the script is dog shit. It's absolutely terrible. The editing is terrible. The action is uninspired. I mean, it's just clunky, clunky, clunky with a really poor script and nothing to get excited about. They barely give you any explanation as to where things are going. They kind of try to fill in the gaps as opposed to really give you any story information. And the lines, the dialogue is not well written. It's just not. So if $10 full price admission, I give Shadow Force $3.50 and recommend you don't watch it. Troy, Andor. What do you want to say about Andor? Now that you finished it, is it all done?
Supposedly there are 12 episodes this season, is what I heard. They're on episode 9. I think it could have ended on episode 9, and here's why. First three episodes of season 2, bored to tears. I was like, who's talking to who? Who's the character? What's going on? Like, I don't understand. I had to go look up stuff. I had to go rewatch the season 1
recap. This is a prequel to Rogue One on Disney Plus.
Yes, correct. So season 1, I thought season 1 was great. It was a nice setup, like give me introduction to like why the rebellion is happening, like what they're trying to set up and who Lucian is and who Mon Mothma is and all these characters. And I thought it was great. The first three episodes of season 2, terrible. Episode 4 through episode 9 could have been like a 2.5 hour. There's some stuff you could cut out a little bit. But that could have been a great 2.5 hour movie.
I think each like, three episodes is like 1 year, right? It takes place it's like 1 year in time.
Yeah, it's actually jumping from BBY, which is the battle before Yavin. It jumps from BBB4
Yavin. To
BBB2. Yes, fine, whatever.
God, I don't care.
it jumps from BBB4 to BBB2 by episode 9. But you could literally take that 4 or 5 episodes, squish it down to 2.5 hours, and it would be great, like episode one of Rogue One. And then whatever's coming in the next 3 episodes could be potentially like episode 2 of Rogue One, and then have Rogue One be the finale of a great trilogy. Because the 4 through 8 was just, it was great. The setup, the intrigue, the execution, the big ass battle, and then kind of like this trailer off at the end to set up something new. 4 through 9, definitely worth a watch. 1 to 3.
Hear that heavy sigh from John? That's sadness. He's just sick of hearing about Andor. But I'm glad you liked it. I still say it's a very boring show. I will never try it again. I've given it 3 passes now. It's not for me. Not knocking it. Just not for me.
It's okay.
But
it is slow in some parts.
But I will tell you, I did check out Poker Face season 2. And Natasha Lyonne is back as this Columbo-esque detective who's just sniffing out bullshit left and right in Poker Face. It's on Peacock. If you don't watch it, it's the only thing I watch with commercials. I hate watching anything with commercials, but I will suffer because I do love this show. It's created by Rian Johnson and Natasha Lyonne. And essentially, each episode is really her being a Columbo. She's just trying to figure out how to catch a murderer in their crimes. And every episode is a little different. Some of the plots are a little wonky this year. I feel like they get a little too cutesy with some of the ideas, but man, when she's on fire, she's on fire. I just find her absolutely fascinating. And just like Peter Falk was with Columbo, where I didn't really care about the case so much, I cared about the performance because he kept me interested. Same thing with her. She just does a great job of keeping me interested. I've been waiting for the show to come back. I don't like it as much as season 1. I do think that, again, they got a little too cutesy. The very first episode, I did not like the main plot, but I love Cynthia Erivo, who's the guest star on it, and they really made it work by the end. And there's an overarching story element that finally gets resolved very early in the season and kind of puts the show on its own footing so it can really live on a case-by-case basis or episode-of-the-week basis, which I think is to this show's strong point because they really try to do something different with each episode. So I really recommend it. I love the first season. I like this one quite a bit. If $10 full price of admission, I give it about $7. I really recommend Poker Face. I really want it to come back because I love good mystery TV, and there aren't enough of them that are worth a damn. You guys don't watch this one, do you?
I did not.
Nope, not for me.
Sons of bitches.
I want to watch it. It's just that it's Peacock, so not typically high on my list of like, oh yeah, I have that one.
If I give you my login, would you check it out?
I have a login. I have Comcast internet.
So you could watch it.
I could. I just, like, Peacock is like 8 on my list of streaming services to think about on the top of my head.
Damn. I'm glad they're not a promotional part because that would really suck. How you doing, Peacock? Well, you're 8 on our list of streaming services.
For the same exact problem. It's like if I wouldn't have Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN bundle, like Hulu would be in the same boat probably because it's the whole like, I got to remember that it comes out a day later. It's like, that's just, it's dumb.
All right, well, that's it for the show, but I do want to ask you guys. NBC canceled a bunch of shows, right? And CBS is kind of like re-upping a lot of theirs. Anything hit you with the cancellations this year? I mean, I know there's not really, we don't follow network TV, but we do watch it on streaming. Has there been a big cancellation in the last week that's really hit you hard?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the shows they announced are all things that I was sort of watching, but I at the same time, I'm okay with them being gone.
Fair enough. I was a little disappointed. Night Court got canceled right after they had a huge reunion with Simon and, oh God, one of the two from
Melissa Rauch.
Yes, thank you. From Big Bang Theory. And it ended on a cliffhanger, so they'll never get a resolution. What I will say is Night Court is one of my favorite TV shows of all time, the original, and they have never, ever come close to that magic. So I get why it's canceled. I just wish people weren't left on a cliffhanger. It's a bummer. So here's what I want to end on. Why, in this age where so many of these decisions are already made well ahead of time, why are they still doing cliffhangers for shows that are like in their third or more years and not planning for if it's going to get renewed or not so that they could give a fair ending to a show? Isn't it inexcusable at this point? Troy, you're Mr. TV. At this point, don't you think it's inexcusable to leave fans like that?
Anybody that writes a cliffhanger at this point in time should be shot.
Unless it's
firing
renewed.
Squad style. No, even if it's not, even if it's renewed. Like, I mean, it's got to be like renewed, guaranteed. We already started shooting the second season for you to write the cliffhanger. Each season should be written in a way that the season is self-contained, yet leaves open the possibility of something more. So you can always come back to it at some point down the road.
Hmm. Especially with all these reboots and rejuvenations.
Yeah.
Well, reunions like, and things like that.
Dark Matter is a great example of this on Apple TV Plus, because they said from the onset, they were only going to do the book. It was done. First season was over. The book is complete. We are not going to do any more. But the way they ended it leaves open like 8 different storylines that they could pick up on, that if somebody wanted to pick it up and keep going with it because it was actually really good, they could do that. And I think that's the way TV should be. Like, good stories are able to keep going unless you're Roland Deschain, because then you'll always be going over and over and over because Ka's like a wheel.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think that does it for this episode. What do you guys think? Anything more you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'm good.
I mean, if we talk any more, because you've done like 3 other topics since you tried to sign off, we'd be Return of the King at that point.
So. Wow. Want you to just play the quiet game, or what some people call it, the shut the fuck up game. We're out of here. Guys, thanks for listening. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, which still exists, they aren't dead, or you want to stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn.
With your phone in front of your face.
Yeah, that's somehow the same as a freaking movie screen. You're insane. Just insane. And the membrane.
That's a completely different rocker.
Perfect. All right. You ready?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Almost threw up there.
God, that was... Both of you, that was the most forced thing I've ever heard in my life.